This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a Tuesday edition of Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson, and I'll be with you all night long right here on SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We have a lot to get to over the course of the next 3 hours. As we react to the latest college football playoff rankings, we'll be joined by Brock Vereen, bottom of this hour, Big Ten Network, CBS Sports college football analyst. We'll get his thoughts on what this playoff bracket looks like as of right now. We will play a clip from someone that I believe is trying to set himself up to get fired with the words that come out of his mouth every single week. Also, I'll make the case for someone else in college football to lose their job based on the latest college football playoff rankings. We'll do our usual Tuesday segment of Rank and File, looking at all the data in the NFL, college football, best teams against the spread, over, under. And also, we're going to add a new wrinkle to it as we say goodbye to college football. Today, we will now start adding NBA and next week college basketball into this segment, just so we know where these teams are at this point in the year. Also, some other great guests are going to join us, including Hall of Famer Warren Moon at 12:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 9:30 out here on the West Coast. I want his thoughts on Drake May. I want to know what he sees in Drake May, who's now your odds-on favorite to be the MVP. And then more importantly, his former team, the Seahawks. How far can they go? Where do they align in the NFC? Are they a top two, top three team? The Hall of Famer Warren Moon will join us and break all of that down. Plus, usual segments, Greg Peterson on college basketball. All these conference crossover games are awesome. Scott Spritzer will have picks in college football, the NFL as well coming your way. But right now, let's get you updated on where we stand with the action currently going on. College basketball in Kentucky, North Carolina is up 44-43. I gave out and bet a bad number last night, guys. I got the worst of it. I laid 7.5 with Kentucky, and it turns out this team may not be turning it on against top-tier opponents. They've had a couple opportunities, and that's where their two losses have been this year. And it looks like more of the same with North Carolina in town. By the time I got home from the show, after placing the bet during our final segment yesterday, this number at Circa was down to 5, and that's when I knew I was gone. I knew the bet didn't have a chance, but that's what you do sometimes. You take a chance, you get out early, and you try to beat these line moves. And unfortunately, in that case, we didn't get there. There's still a lot of time to go. We're just underway in the second, but it's a one-point game. Kentucky leads 45-44. Your updated odds, Kentucky laying 3.5 and an in-game total of 148.5. Ooh, it just jumped to 150.5. The other ranked game that has attention right now is UConn at Kansas. And the Huskies lead 55-54. They're laying 1.5 in-game. That total down to 126.5 just now. It just flashed again down to that 126.5. It closed at 141 in a hook. UConn laying 2.5. They're now 1.5-point road favorites. The big question for Kansas is, when are we going to see Darren Peterson back? Their best player, their leading scorer. He has not been available for a while now and not playing in this game. I'd think about a UConn bet and think about this. UConn minus 1.5 is minus 135. UConn on the money line is minus 210. That's how much that 1.5 points makes a difference with 3:37 to go on the road in Lawrence. Kentucky's up 4 now. We have a chance to make a run, although they just turned it over underneath the basket. So North Carolina coming back the other way there. A line move we did beat. I'll give myself credit here. We took Miami catching 5. I couldn't believe this number kept getting bigger and bigger all afternoon long, and eventually got up to 5. So we took Miami plus the 5 at Ole Miss. And with 41 seconds to go, they're going to win outright. 75-61 is your score right now. The other game we are sweating, and I'll update you on some of the other college hoops action, we took UC San Diego plus 4.5, and it's not going well on the road in Reno. Nevada leads 35-27. They're 8.5-point favorites at the break. 137.5 is your total. And we closed with this one having UC San Diego catching 5.5. So if you think they can come back, they're a pretty good shooting team, but it appears that Steve Alford's bunch might be a little bit too much of a jump up in talent for them tonight. In Eugene, USC and Oregon are tied at the half, 39-39. Trojans laying 2.5 in the second half, 158 in a hook is your total right now. We close in this one with USC laying 3.5 pregame, so you can get a discount of a point right now. I really don't know what to make of Oregon. They have a couple weird losses this year. Altman's a guy that I really like to back in tournament play. Regular season, though, it could be hit or miss for me. I don't know about you, but for me, it's hit or miss with Altman. I don't want to make any generalizations about him. But that's where we stand in that game, 39-39 at the break. And then a couple other scores to update you on with 2:29 to go. Missouri with a one-point lead on the road in South Bend on Notre Dame, 65-64. They're laying 1.5 in game. And that is where we stand with the big college basketball action currently going on. As far as the NBA is concerned, a short slate of games, a bunch of them over. We have one yet to tip. So let me give out my play in that one first. And we bet it last night. Want to see if it's moved at all. We took Chet Holmgren for Oklahoma City over 9.5 rebounds at +101. It's a pretty good matchup for him. There's no Isaiah Hartenstein. And Golden State gives up a ton of rebounds to not just centers, but power forwards. And with no Hartenstein in the lineup, I think when Oklahoma City runs that small ball look, Holmgren's going to end up being the de facto five, even though they really won't have one. They kind of play a positionless game. And I think because of that, he's going to be crashing the boards the most. The number is still 9.5 and +103, so you get a little bit better number than I got actually with the juice, but I still like it. I think Holmgren's going to be able to get a lot of rebounds in this matchup for the Oklahoma City Thunder. In terms of the side or the total, I'd lay the 11.5. No Steph Curry for Golden State tonight. That is a big issue. It's an older team. And the Thunder, even though they have a plethora of injuries they're dealing with, right? Lou Dort's not going to give it a go. A few others out of the lineup. But I still think they get it done on the road in Golden State. They're just on a different level than everyone else. And right now at Circa, you could lay 10.5. I kind of like that. And I'd lean under as well because of the blowout factor. At some point, you just stop trying to get those buckets. So that's where we stand with that game. Some other games that were already final and in the books. The Wizards and Sixers. Philly won 121-102. They cover the 13.5. Washington off a back-to-back. They won as double-digit dogs last night. Tonight, they lose on that back-to-back. We went 1-1 in that game. We had Andre Drummond over rebounds at +116, so that got home. But VJ Edgecombe, we missed by one. We went over 21.5 points, rebounds, and assists combined. And because of a blowout, he didn't really finish this game. Only played 24 minutes, and he finished with 9, 6, and 6. So that puts it at what, 12, 11, 21. We had over 21.5. Here's the thing that hurts. It actually moved the other way and closed at 20.5. So if we would have waited to bet that, we could have got a better number, and it would have ended up cashing in this game. Toronto topped Portland, 121-118. Trailblazers cover, though, +4.5. Game goes over the total of 232.5. Boston beat the Knicks, 123-117. They were short dogs of 1.5 at home. And that game goes over the total of 230.5 there. Minnesota took care of New Orleans in overtime, 149-142, way over that total of 230.5. But the Pelicans, without Zion Williamson, cover the 12.5 point spread there. We hit Sadiq Bey over points, rebounds, and assists in that game. It was just a good matchup with some of the injuries New Orleans was dealing with for Sadiq Bey to go off in that situation. So right now, I guess the last game I have to update you on is Memphis. Memphis and San Antonio. And the Spurs won 126-119. So they cover the 4.5 point spread at home. That game ends up going over the total. It's just overs in the NBA every night. Why are we not just betting all the overs? We may do that tomorrow. Just bet all the overs, see how it works out. I can tell you this, the under would start hitting. You know how my luck works? The under would probably start hitting. But a lot of overs, man. A lot of overs across the board in the NBA all season long, it feels like. So that is the situation with the live action currently going on. I don't have any hockey on in studio. I'm not the biggest hockey guy. We're going to outsource that. Our producer, Adam Bernard, who is great with hockey, has his own podcast. He's going to join us in our final segment. We're going to start getting his picks on Tuesdays for Wednesday's card. And he has a few that jumped out to him. So don't worry, hockey fans. We're not ignoring the puck. We got plenty of NHL bets coming your way later on in the show. They're about to get underway at Oracle in Golden State. They're announcing everyone for the Warriors right now. But this should be an interesting game. Just because Oklahoma City dealing with all the injuries, I still believe they're deep enough to cover this number. But we'll see how it goes as Kentucky and Duke looks like, or Kentucky and North Carolina. Every time I think Kentucky has a chance to make a run here, North Carolina is making a bucket. And I think they have a chance at an old school 3-point play here because an and one situation. Vesar got hacked, hit the shot, and if he hits this bucket, it's a two-point game. It's 49-46. Kentucky with the lead in Lexington with 6-1 North Carolina in town, 5-2 Kentucky, looking to find a way to win this one. They, you know, you look at Kentucky's season, and it's a good roster. Like, I wasn't as into the hype as a lot of other people I know, but there was a lot of really sharp college basketball people I know that were way into Kentucky this year. I looked at the roster and I said, this is kind of the balance you're looking for. There were freshmen, there were veterans, there were guys who could bang the glass and dominate in the paint. There was also plenty of shooting. It's a Mark Pope team, for crying out loud. I really liked the way they looked, but so far this season, you know, the Louisville game, the score looks worse than it actually was. Late in the game, it got wonky. And then Michigan State, they got totally owned. If you're just going to go off the numbers and the final score, they've been outclassed in the two games. You want to see them elevate their game. This is now their third chance. I mean, covering the number, I don't know if that's going to happen, but for the Wildcats, you just want to pick up a win. And remember, Mark Pope had that weird press conference after their loss to, I believe it was Louisville. It might have been Michigan State, either one. After one of the losses, he was like, you guys don't know what went on in that locker room and all this other stuff, and I'm going to get us going in the right direction. It was super depressing and very weird. So we'll see what Kentucky can do here as they have the ball up by two with 11 minutes to go. Hey, are you not a Veasan Pro subscriber yet? Well, this is your best chance and really the best deal we're going to offer all year long. Our Black Friday special is still live, and for just $60, you'll get Veasan Pro access to everything we offer now through May 1st. That's all the best bets. That's all the video on the Veasan Watch app, plus betting splits, DraftKings, Circa, Bracco, the AI-powered prop tools, and coverage of every sport now through May 1st, the NFL Draft, the Masters, March Madness. Head to Veasan.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. What did the college football committee do today that jumped out to me? I'll share next.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Underway in Golden State, Warriors up 3-2 early on with Oklahoma City. An update in Kentucky, 9:40 to go. The Wildcats up 53-49. Can they cover that 7.5 for us? Welcome back in. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. It's Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. A busy night in sports with these really good college basketball games. But as per usual on a Tuesday, the headline story is not college basketball. And there's no Maction, so there's no college football. Yet the only thing people want to talk about are these college football playoff rankings. And I don't think there were any massive surprises today, but there were a couple of betting things that did jump out to me. Once we saw how the committee ranked these teams in the second to last ranking of the season. So first, let me share with you where we stand right now. Ohio State, Indiana remain number one and number two in the nation. They're followed by Georgia at number three. Texas Tech at four, who both move up a spot because A&M lost to Texas. Then you have Oregon at five, Ole Miss at six. A&M falls to seven. Oklahoma's eight. Alabama flip-flops with Notre Dame up to nine. The Irish fall to 10. BYU and Miami stay at 11 and 12. Then you have Texas making the leap from 16 to 13, and Vanderbilt remains at 14 in these latest college football playoff rankings. So the first thing that jumps out to me just from a betting perspective before I get into all these scenarios and things that jump out is I just happened to be looking at DraftKings. I marked down all the odds before these rankings were announced and then went to look at how they moved once the committee told us how they think about the teams just to see what the guys behind the counter at all these various sports books think. So the first thing that jumped out to me, Ohio State goes from plus 160 to plus 175. They get a little bit longer to win the title. It's not a huge deal. It's not a huge jump. It's just worth noting. Indiana, plus 425 down to 4-1. They get a little bit shorter to win the title. A&M, following the loss to Texas, they stay the same at 12-1. BYU goes from 400-1 to 600-1 to win the title. The yes playoffs on them go from plus 380 to 4-1, and their no playoffs are now minus 525. Notre Dame went from yes to make the playoffs minus 400 to from 400 to 500, and their no is now 3-1 on Notre Dame. But the one thing that I don't understand here, because Notre Dame and Alabama flip-flopped, Alabama is now higher than Notre Dame, and they're ninth in the country. But the national title odds on the Tide went from 12 to 1 to 14 to 1, which suggests that the betting market doesn't think that they're as much of a lock. It's a very slight adjustment. It's a very small move. But based on these seedings right now, it would seem to me the committee is telling you that Alabama is pretty much locked into the college football playoff. I think even if they were blown out, they still have a chance. But we're seeing them looking like they're going to be a part of this bracket. So why did they get a little bit longer to win the title? I don't totally understand that. That was the first thing that jumped out to me. The next thing is Ole Miss is sitting at number 6. And I think the committee did the right thing. They didn't ding those kids. They didn't punish them for Lane Kiffin leaving. And on top of that, we got news earlier today from Lane Kiffin releasing a statement that offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss Jr. is going back to Oxford, where he's going to be with the Rebels for the playoff, remain their play caller, offensive coordinator. And that's a positive development from that whole situation where Lane gave the ultimatum to his staff. And instead, Weiss is going to end up going back and helping that team achieve their goal of making a push for a title. Look, if they can still have the system that Lane Kiffin ran and things go to plan, they're a dangerous team. In the vacuum of one game, with Trinidad Chambliss, while it was on a different level in Division II at Ferris State, that's a dude I don't want to see in the playoff. His mobility, his big playmaking, I think he's ultra-aggressive, he's pretty smart with the football as well, and he's a senior. He's been through this before. I think he's a senior. Maybe he's a junior. Last I looked, he was a senior. Either way, what I'll say about Ole Miss, they're pretty long. They're 35-1 to win the title. I don't think it's crazy they go on a run and win a game or two. I don't know if they're national title good, but could this be a situation with Lane Kiffin leaving and them saying, good riddance, you don't want to be a part of this. We've got our coach in Pete Golden, where it brings them together, it galvanizes the group, and that becomes their rallying cry. I think it's a pretty watered-down college football field, if we're going to be fair. Ohio State is the best team, and I understand why. They're the defending champs, even though I don't agree with that whole sentiment. But they're loaded. They've got NFL guys all over the place. They've got a quarterback in Sayan who's playing extremely well, and he knows how to get the ball to all of his weapons, and a defense that doesn't allow a lot of points. They're rightfully the favorite. They could be knocked off by just about anyone. Let's be totally fair about that. Indiana could knock them off in the Big Ten title game, which we'll preview coming up later on in the show. But I think all of these teams have a good chance against each other. That's why there's a lot of outrage about Miami, because as good as some of these teams are, if Miami and Indiana lined it up, Miami could beat them. I'm not saying they'd be favored. I'm not saying that would happen every single time. They play 10 times, Miami can win 4, 3 or 4, somewhere in that range. That's enough. If that happens to be one of these times in the playoff, you're surviving and advancing. I just think this whole field is watered down. And Ole Miss at a big number is awfully interesting just because they now have that galvanizing moment. The other elements, Notre Dame and Alabama flipping, and also what we're seeing with BYU sitting at 11. If BYU beats Texas Tech in the Big 12 title game, they're going to be in the field, and Notre Dame's probably going to be out because Texas Tech would only have one loss. It's in their conference title, so they would end up being in this as well. Alabama, as we mentioned, they're locked in, it feels like, based on the numbers here, unless they're blown out by Georgia. But even then, I don't know how you knock them down another peg if they lose to Georgia, because they would then be playing an extra game while the teams that you'd replace them with may be sitting at home right now. So I'm not sure that's totally fair. It'd be their third loss. It would be precedent. We've never seen a third loss team make a college football playoff, but I do think these circumstances are a little bit different. And speaking of teams that are not playing this weekend and potentially moving ahead, Hunter Yurichich, the committee chairman of the College Football Playoff Committee, was asked about that on ESPN by Reese Davis. Could teams who are not playing this weekend move up? Here's what he had to say.
Yes, teams that are idle can move up or down.
So we're not set with Miami definitively being behind Notre Dame no matter what. Is that fair to say?
Reese, following the championship games, we will re-rank the top 25 teams, and we'll see where they fall.
I'm going to take that as the Canes still have a chance.
I don't think so. I've been yelling about Miami needs to be in this conversation. If Notre Dame's, it's not either or Notre Dame or Miami. I think they both should be in, but based on the parameters and the guidelines that set up this college football playoff, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't see how it can happen, in all honesty. And Hunter Yurichich, every time he opens his mouth, I question if Arkansas should keep him as their athletic director. Like, I was trying to think of scenarios before the show of people who got fired from their regular job based on doing something else in the world. Mostly it was people like tweeting stuff or being political and their employer fires them. Hunter Yurichich is kind of showing us that he may not be capable of being a leader in an organization. And I wouldn't trust him to run a multi-million dollar thing like a college athletics program right now. I don't understand what he's saying there. Miami's dead. Miami's not making the playoff. I think we all have to accept that. They would need Alabama and BYU to get blown out. They'd also need James Madison to lose and Duke to win. That is way too much to go right for them. Because there is a scenario, by the way, according to the guidelines, where if Duke wins and they're not ranked, the next group team would make it, which means JMU would be in. That's assuming BYU loses to Texas Tech. So it's kind of convoluted if you follow me there, but you need Duke to win, to remain unranked. The ACC would then not get a bid. And if that were to happen, I think you'd have to, if you're all the schools in the ACC, you have to let go of your commissioner, Jim Phillips, to allow this to happen on your watch in a year where you have a team as good as Miami that you did not get into your conference title game because of your tiebreakers. I mean, that's fireable because there's an opportunity to make a run, to make money, to win a national championship. And while the Canes didn't do some of their part, you have restructured your league in a way where you made this possible by inviting Cal and Stanford into the ACC. It wasn't just a bad scheduling situation when you think about traveling to the West Coast and them having to travel across the country, but it's also they're not good at football. They've lowered your Q rating across the scale. Every single team that played them did not pick up special wins because Cal and Stanford were on their schedule. And then speaking of schedules, the expansion of this league has gotten out of hand, and you have a team like Virginia who's in the conference championship game that did not play anyone this season. That, to me, you can only look at the commissioner who, under these guidelines, has failed his league, has failed the members to have them represented, where we may be watching James Madison in the title game over a team from the ACC. When this thing started, the whole point was to make sure these big leagues were represented. You had your ability to have your fingerprints all over all of these guidelines, and you failed. Virginia, who only game on their schedule that mattered was Florida State, and they won it at home in double overtime. Outside of that, they didn't play Clemson. They didn't play Miami. They have not done anything. And you have Miami, who's your highest-ranked team, who's not going to be in the playoff. You got to get rid of Jim Phillips. He failed you as a conference. So that's what I would say about that. So we will look at the potential odds from FanDuel of what the college football playoff matchups would look like later on in the show. But when we return, we'll get the thoughts of Brock Vereen, Big Ten Network analyst, also CBS Sports. And what does he make of Indiana and Ohio State? Do the Hoosiers have a chance playing in Indianapolis? All that on the other side of Cashing Out.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson here at the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas, broadcasting as always, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We've got a lot of action across the board. Kentucky starting to pull away from North Carolina, under 6 minutes to go. They're up 56-50. Early goings in Golden State. The Thunder lead 22-17. Chet Holmgren already 3 rebounds with 3:13 to go in the first. We love to see that for our bet. And that's the big action currently going on. But the big story is the latest college football playoff rankings. To help me digest it, make sense of what we just saw, and maybe make sense of what Hunter Yurichich is saying these days, we're going to go to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in our buddy Brock Vereen, Big Ten Network analyst. Also check him out over at CBS Sports and on X at Brock Vereen. He joins us now on the Progressive guest line. So Brock, looking at these rankings, the top stays mostly the same. A&M falls following the loss to Texas. Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, Georgia 3, Texas Tech 4, Oregon 5. Ole Miss doesn't get punished for Lane Kiffin leaving 6. A&M 7, Oklahoma 8, Alabama and Notre Dame flip-flop. So Bama's 9, Notre Dame's 10. And then BYU, Miami, Texas round out the top 13. When I throw it all at you, what are the biggest things that jump out to you with the latest rankings?
I'm excited about it. Obviously, 1 through 3 make perfect sense. I would say that Texas Tech is the most intriguing team in this CFP. Texas Tech is going to knock someone's head off in the first round, whether that is after a bye, therefore being the second round, or if they're hosting a game. Texas Tech is a dangerous team. Ohio State and Indiana naturally ending up on opposite sides of the bracket, assuming the Big Ten championship isn't some massive blowout. I see a scenario where in a perfect world, it's Oregon, Texas Tech, Ohio State, and Indiana as the Final Four teams.
Ooh, I love that. I'm with you on the Red Raiders. I've slowly warmed to them. I bet them to win the title at 19-1. I just think that defense is good against anyone. And it does. Am I crazy in saying it feels like a very watered-down field this year? I know Ohio State's at the top, and we'll preview them with Indiana coming up. But for as dominant as they've been, are we sure they're that much better than everyone else? What do you say to that?
I would say that the trouble with Ohio State is we don't even know how good they can be because they really haven't been tested. Yeah. I would say this defense has an opportunity to be the best defense that we have ever seen in college football. What Matt Patricia has done so far is impressing a lot of people. It's confusing a lot of quarterbacks. I'm telling you right now, he is on page 10 of 50 of that defensive playbook. There are things he has planned that he just hasn't needed to show yet, and that's what makes Ohio State so scary. I would say Texas Tech probably has the second best defense, and the thing that blows my mind about Texas Tech is ask someone, anyone, name a player on Texas Tech not named Jacob Rodriguez, and they can't because they're just this amoeba, because people have taken so long to accept that they're a legitimate team, that Baron Morton is flinging the rock, that they have two running backs who can go, that they have four wide receivers with over 500 receiving yards. Texas Tech is going to knock someone's head off. I'm screaming it from the rafters.
Hey, I'm with you. They're still 11-1 to win the title. I still think there's a value on that. You have a veteran at quarterback in Baron Morton who's been around forever. His only issue is staying healthy, but we're late in the year. You can protect him. Brock Vereen's with us, Big Ten Network, CBS Sports College Football Analyst, at Brock Vereen on X. And while I'm looking at the national title odds, let's talk about the big story in sports. Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss to go to LSU. I'm actually more on Lane's side than a lot of people. I don't condone everything he's done. 35-1 though on Ole Miss. Pete Golding takes over. He's a guy who's had to do it the hard way. He's had to work his way up all the way from Division II Delta State to now the head coach in the SEC at Ole Miss. Do you believe there's any chance that this galvanizes that locker room and Ole Miss could win a game or two in this college football playoff without Lane Kiffin?
They can win a game without Lane Kiffin, just off of emotion and adrenaline, and we hate that guy, just good old-fashioned hatred. They can win a game, and then the road probably stops there, but it's still the best season in Ole Miss history. Look, I have family in Mississippi. Half of my family is born and raised there. That being said, to the entire state of Mississippi, grow up. It's Lane Kiffin. All of his antics are cute and bubbly when you're looking for a head coach. But when he's not on your side anymore, now all of a sudden you're upset. This is the Lane Kiffin experience. This is what you signed up for. Show me any place he has left under normal circumstances. There are none because it's Lane Kiffin. Why are they acting so surprised? Do you think Ole Miss was the mountaintop for him? Of course not. Now, that being said, I'm rooting for Ole Miss just because it's a good story. But grow up. Please grow up.
Yeah, I agree. Once you bring Lane Kiffin into your town, you kind of know this is the way it's going to end. Let's go to the game. You know these teams inside and out with the Big Ten championship game. Number one, Ohio State is laying 4 points now. This thing's been bet down from 5.5, and the total's 47.5. Do you think Indiana can hang here, or do you think that Ohio State ends up running away and covering that four?
This will be a four-quarter game. I see Ohio State separating in that fourth quarter, not late in the fourth quarter, but enough to walk away where we say, okay, Ohio State remains number one and Indiana remains number two. Quarterback advantage slightly goes to Indiana. Wide receiver advantage firmly with Ohio State. Defense advantage firmly with Ohio State from what they're doing from a play calling standpoint and how creative they can get. But man for man, outside of Caleb Downs and Arvell Reese, you have Aiden Fisher and D'Angelo Pons on Indiana. Of course, you take Ohio State's two best over Indiana's two best. But outside of those two, tit for tat, Indiana's defense led by defensive coordinator Brian Haynes is as good as anyone. Neither team will be able to run the ball against either team, which means it comes down to the quarterback. The advantage for Indiana, Iowa, Oregon, and Penn State, they've had to have a big drive in the fourth quarter with their backs against the wall, and they were able to do that. So what we don't know about Ohio State is backs against the wall, only time was against Texas, and they were able to get that win. That was a lifetime ago. We know that Indiana's battle-tested. So I take Ohio State late. But the tighter this game gets, the longer it gets, the bigger advantage goes to the Hoosiers.
Great breakdown. He's Brock Faerien, Big Ten Network. Catch him there. CBS Sports as well, at Brock Faerien on X. All right, let's go to Georgia and Alabama. Georgia's laying 2.5. Total's 47.5. Georgia's looking for revenge, but Alabama may be more efficient offensively. How do you see the SEC title game going?
Both of these teams are more alike than they are different. When they are rolling at their best, firing at all cylinders, either of these teams can beat almost anyone, but they're not consistent. I feel that's what separates Indiana and Ohio State. They have had a level of consistency all year long. Georgia and Alabama, you have head-scratching moments thinking, I don't know if this is even a top three team in the SEC. But then two drives later, you think, okay, wait, this might be the best team in the country. And them playing one another is perfect because this is going to be chaos. I could see Georgia winning by 30. I could see Alabama winning with the last second field goal. I feel more of the game impact relies on which version of Georgia shows up. If the best version of Georgia shows up, they are not losing this game, but we just have no proof that they can be the best version of themselves for four consistent quarters.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster ride with the Dogs this year. And I've come around on Gunnar Stockton. I think he's really good, but like, is he good because he's good, or is he good because he has to be good because the defense isn't up to the standard it's been in years past? All right, we're getting a rematch with the Big 12 title game, Texas Tech and BYU. Last time in Lubbock, Red Raiders won 29-7. This time the odds have the Red Raiders laying 12.5, totals 49.5. Do you think BYU can keep it close or even win this one? Or is it all Red Raiders from here on out?
It's the Texas Tech pass rush, and there's only so many adjustments you can make to a pass rush. At the end of the day, their three or four are better than the five you have to block them. It's that simple. I am amazed by how good Bear Backmeyer has been. He does not look like a freshman. He looks like he has been here three times over. But at the end of the day, no matter how cool, calm, and mature for your youth you are, if there are three Red Raiders in your face after 2 seconds, every single snap, there's only so much he can do. And again, Texas Tech's offense, who doesn't get the credit that they have in years past, Texas Tech is now a defensively led team. That offense is for real. And I see BYU holding firm for the first half. I see Texas Tech starting to separate in the second half. I'll call it 28-13.
He is Brock Faerien. You can see him all over Big Ten Network on X at Brock Faerien. The breakdowns are always tremendous. The personality's off the charts. Thanks as always for doing this, man. We'll chat again soon.
Anytime, sir. We'll see you.
Brock Faerien killing it as usual. At great points about Texas Tech. Not just because I agree, by the way. I don't just do that where someone says something I agree with and I just say it's a great point. He had great breakdowns of Texas Tech. Still sitting out there in the market, 11-1 to win the title. I could convince myself of a lot of long shots. I'm just as good as Ohio State appears. And he broke it down. They really haven't been tested this year. They've been dominant. But context has to matter. Who you play matters. That's why I just don't think the number's correct at plus 175. I think a few of these teams could knock them off. That's why if I'm looking at this board, Georgia 8-1, Notre Dame 10-1, Texas Tech 11-1, heck, A&M and Alabama at 12 and 14-1 apiece all make sense to me. You can convince me of anyone. It is wide open in the college football playoff. It's not wide open in the NFL. In fact, we'll talk about a team desperate to stay in the playoff mix next.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson with you all night long from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Updates in the live action. North Carolina took the lead for a brief moment on Kentucky on the road in Lexington. However, with 107 to go, it's 62-61. The Wildcats with the lead on the Tar Heels. we're not going to get our cover. And there was a point, too, as well, in the last 10 minutes where Kentucky extended the lead to like 4 or 5 points, but not able to pull away and cover that 7.5. So we'll see how this goes. At this point, with so little time remaining, I'm rooting for overtime. Kentucky is a 1.5-point favorite right now. You can go -145 on the money line. I don't hate it, but at the same time, North Carolina has been resilient. They've been hit a few times now, and they just keep answering, and they keep coming back. They're not going away, and I got to give them a lot of credit in this game. In the NBA, we are in the second quarter, and we've got the Thunder leading the Warriors on the road, 34-29, 11:02 to go in the first half. Thunder laying 11.5. That's where this closed. 10.5 here at Circa. Total is 223.5. I think about the under as well because I do think the Thunder end up running away with this game. And the Warriors, who are missing a couple people, I just don't think they end up trying real hard in that fourth quarter, just based on the way the Thunder are taking care of business this year. But that's where we stand with the basketball. Let's now go back to the NFL. It's time for the three-point stance.
The top stories in football.
We want some more! We want some more! We want some more!
Every single day.
Ice up, son! Ice up!
This is 3-Point Stance.
Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
We'll play intramurals, brother.
Story number one in the 3-Point Stance. We are looking at Thursday night football, and it is a desperation spot for the Detroit Lions taking on the Dallas Cowboys, as right now in the market, we've got Detroit laying 3, total of 54.5, but Detroit can't afford to stub their toe the rest of the way. They need to reel off these wins, and right now they're the 8 seed, 7-5 on the season. Who's right behind them? That would be the Dallas Cowboys at 6-5-1. This is the type of game that could be an elimination game in the regular season. This could decide the fate of who's going or in contention for the playoffs the rest of the way. And Dan Campbell knows that. He addressed this situation when he spoke with the media earlier today. And Dan Campbell, you know, coming into the year, I was one of the few people that believed in Dan Campbell. I was one of the few people that thought losing Aaron Glenn, losing Ben Johnson, it would be okay because Dan Campbell is your CEO. Dan Campbell is the guy who's in charge of all of this. He would be able, with his culture bleeding down from the top, be able to guide this team in the right direction. And for a while, I looked like I was right. But I was wrong. I was wrong. It appears that this offense is a mess. The defense is dealing with a ton of injuries. And I just think it might be too much to overcome with so much transition for them coming off of last year and the success they've had the last two seasons. It's just asking a lot at this point. But sometimes this is when leaders do their best. Back against the wall, everyone counting you out. How do you respond to adversity? Dan Campbell understands what they're up against.
It's really about playing winning football, you know, and it's going to take all three phases, and it takes every guy that we have doing their job. The margin for error is small, but it's doable. We can do it. And but, you know, we got to eliminate the things that keep us from winning before we can actually win the game. You know, before you start battling against the opponent, you got to quit battling against yourself.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. But at some point, it's like, how do you manage with the injuries they're dealing with? And these aren't excuses. It's just a reality. Terrion Arnold was put on injured reserve. So he's going to be out for the year, it looks like, according to Tom Pelissero. Kirby Joseph, their safety, knee injury. He didn't practice earlier today. Khalif Raymond, one of their wide receivers, ankle, will not play. And Penei Sewell didn't participate in practice as well today. They're starting right tackle. Tight end Brock Wright, who's now the starter, was the backup to Sam Laporta, who's done. He didn't participate in practice today. And then the big what if, Amon-Ra St. Brown. He is the number one wide receiver for this team. He is Jared Goff's safety blanket on those short shots, and he picks up yards after catch. If he's not there, this offense, it is very Jahmyr Gibbs dependent because Jameson Williams, sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. Amon-Ra St. Brown, though, according to Dan Campbell, is going to play if he can, but right now they don't know. If he can, he's going to give it to go. That was kind of the quote from Dan Campbell saying he's a tough guy, and if he can basically breathe and walk on the field, St. Brown will try to be out there. St. Brown did meet with the media earlier today, and he talked about the situation the Lions find themselves in.
I don't know if one win is the answer, because we've kind of been winning, losing, winning, losing, winning, losing these past, I don't know how many weeks it's been, so One win, I don't think will be the answer. Would it help? Definitely. But we gotta stack wins. I think that's the biggest thing, stacking wins, especially at this point in the season. So, like, for us right now, it's the Cowboys is the most important. So we gotta take care of this first. But, you know, say we do take care of this game, we just gotta be able to continue to, you know, build off what we did the week prior and not take steps backwards. So I think that's the biggest thing. But a win would definitely help a lot of things right now.
Yeah, no, a win over Dallas would be huge. To me, I lean Detroit laying the three. You just look at the history. When Dan Campbell's teams lose, they usually respond with a win. And he does very well covering the number as well in those spots. But they need this one. They desperately need it. Because after Dallas, they go to Los Angeles to take on the Rams. Following that, a couple of easier games, you would assume Pittsburgh and at Minnesota. But they did lose to the Vikings a few weeks ago in early November. And then they'll finish at Chicago in Week 18. The situation for Detroit is just they have to accept the reality. They're not winning this division. So they have to be a wild card team, which means they're battling for a bunch of other teams for a playoff spot. The only way you can control your fate is just keep winning games. As far as the matchup with Dallas is concerned, I have a couple player props I've already bet up at VSiN.com/picks. The first one we're going to look at is Jahmyr Gibbs. Because, you know, the Dallas run defense seemingly is getting better. Thanksgiving, Kareem Hunt ran 14 times for 58 yards, but he did catch the ball three times for 39 yards. So I think Jahmyr Gibbs, over 33.5 receiving yards, is a really good play for Thursday. 2 weeks ago, Saquon Barkley had more success through the air than on the ground against this Dallas defense. 10 for 22 on the ground, 7 for 53 through the air. 3 weeks ago, Ashton Jeanty, 6 for 7 on the ground. That's 6 carries for 7 yards. And he had 6 catches for 27 yards in that game. Now, here's the question you have to figure out, though. Is the success of this run defense because Dallas made the improvements and got Quinton Williams and added Logan Wilson at linebacker, or is it because they faced Kansas City, Philadelphia, and the Raiders, who have had, not Kansas City, but the latter two, have had issues running the football all season long? Either way, I think it's a good matchup for Jahmyr Gibbs, especially with Amon-Ra St. Brown injured. Just trying to get the ball into their playmakers' hands. I think they're going to have to isolate Gibbs in the passing game just to let him make plays in space and make dudes miss. And by the way, it's a good matchup overall. The Dallas Cowboys allow the third most receiving yards to opposing running backs at 44.66 yards per game. On the other side, one injury update for the Cowboys. George Pickens has a calf and a knee injury, but he did practice in full earlier today. And I really like Dak Prescott, over 267.5 pass yards. This Lions secondary, as we touched on, Terrion Arnold out, Kirby Joseph dealing with an injury, not sure if he's going to play. He's been out for a while. I like Dak to go over on his passing yards. And Detroit last week against Jordan Love, 0 sacks. They are not getting the same pressure as he threw for 234 yards and 4 touchdowns. 2 weeks ago, they only sacked Jameis Winston one time, and he threw for 366 and 2 touchdowns against them. If you look at Dak's numbers the last 3 weeks, he's averaging 314 yards per game. He's cleared 267.5 all three of his last contests, and he's averaging at home 311 yards per game through the air versus 232 on the road. Give me Dak over passing yards, and I don't bet a lot of passing props for quarterbacks. And then finally, our last story when it comes to the three-point stance is the MVP market. Because after Monday Night Football, Drake May became your odds-on favorite at -135 to win the MVP. His stud wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, spoke with the media and was asked, should Drake May win this award?
That ain't for me to say. You know, obviously I'm biased, you know, because he's my quarterback, and I would love for him to win MVP his second year in the league. He's an amazing quarterback, but, you know, that ain't up to us. I think what we're chasing is going to be a little bit more important. But, you know, you continue to play well, it'll fall right in your lap.
He's right. If he plays well, everything gets going in the right direction. They end up being the one seed in the AFC. Drake May absolutely has a case to win the MVP. I don't think he will because they're on their bye. And Matthew Stafford, the second shot at +125, he has 5 games left. May and the Patriots have 4. And after that, May's going to take on Buffalo, the number one pass defense. Then they go to Baltimore. They're 26th against the pass, but they've been better their last 3. Then they go to the Jets, who are 10th defending the pass, and then the Dolphins, who are 15th, while Stafford has Arizona twice, who are 21st. Detroit, who's number 17, but they're allowing 251 yards through the air their last 3. That's 5th worst in football. Seattle will be tough. Then they go to Atlanta, who's 8th against the pass, but 2nd worst over their last 3. And then they finish with Arizona as well. I don't know if Drake May does finish the job and win the MVP award. That's where we stand with the NFL. We'll attack college football conference title games. the NFL, and more with our buddy Harry Gagnon on the other side of Cashing Out.